And allow me to welcome you to the State Affairs meeting here, March 31st, 2002. Let the record reflect that it is 10 minutes to 10 or 9:50. I do apologize. We were all held up in a meeting. So at this time, if you haven't already done so, could you turn off any electronic devices that you might have? With us today, we have Senator Hollis French, Senator Kevin Myers, Senator Joe Passavant, and Senator Linda Menard. Senate bill on the agenda is Senate Bill 158, Return of Stolen Property, and Senate Bill 68, an act relating to voting rights of felons. So we'll start with Senate Bill 158 this morning, Return of Stolen Property. Senator Fred Dyson, as sponsor of the bill, would you please come forward, state your name and affiliation?
Fred Dyson, Senator for District I, and thank you for hearing the bill.
You're welcome.
I'm particularly delighted that we have two attorneys here, and I think that that some of the substance of this bill is really has to do with legal issues, and I'm glad to have that experience here. So what I became aware of, a friend or acquaintance who runs a large boat building shop was doing his business, and two guys came in saying that they wanted to look around because they thought they might want to have him build a boat. And that night, almost $45,000 worth of electronics that was sitting in unopened boxes there being installed in a boat that was being built disappeared. And my constituent, pretty smart guy, and he not only called the police department, but he got very busy around at the Hawk Shops, the marine dealers, and Craigslist, and found two-thirds of his equipment, tipped the cops off, and the police picked up quite a bit of it, and including some information that probably led to the perpetrators. And it, but he had a schedule to keep, and he had to go out and repurchase the equipment to install in the boat because the equipment was being held in the evidence room pending a trial. I started looking at state law, and the state law allows for the evidence to be photographed and any other method necessary, plus, as Senator French would understand very clearly, the chain of evidence and so on, so that, if necessary, the artifacts of the crime can be represented in court. But nonetheless, while all that often doesn't happen, as I've talked to prosecutors, DAs, and police officers, because of the huge volume of property crimes, and the low priority they often are when there are human assault crimes being prosecuted and so on, they get a low priority. And often the property is not returned, in a timely fashion. So what we're trying to do with this bill is to, our state law I think is adequate in this area. It's really a problem of emphasis and on returning the property and streamlining the process. So what we're trying to do here is to facilitate the process of the property rightful owner getting returned to the rightful owner without disturbing the legal process that goes on in court.
Okay. Senator Dyson, you have 60 days after the final deposition in your bill. Do any senators have any questions of Senator Dyson? Okay, Senator French.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just want to express to the bill sponsor that this seems to be a good idea. I can see how property owners wind up getting inconvenienced, if not worse, for long periods of time. And I think he's put the decision-making point at the right agency. You know, you let the cops decide when they're through with it. That may give some people pause, but they're the people, you know, who we've charged with enforcing the law and prosecuting, or at least beginning the process of prosecution. So it looks to me like a good idea. I guess my question is whether you've gotten letters of support from the different, you know, the state troopers, the union, the administration, so forth.
Shorter answer is no, but I have my delightful and knowledgeable colleague, Annie Carpinetti, is here from Department of Law. She and I and certainly the troopers and a few of the folks at APD have talked, but I have no documents in my hand about that. And by the way, perhaps you, Senator French, can answer this question. I'm told that for a that the defense attorney has to agree for the evidence to leave custody and only a representation of it, i.e. photographs or whatever, to stay there, and that sometimes the defense will say phooey, you know, in perhaps in their efforts to just throw some roadblocks in the way of the prosecution and so on.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson. actually, I don't know. That's a good question. And I think you might be right, especially the earlier in the case, especially pre-trial, you know, you may need to, you know, in order to return a piece of evidence that, you know, while may not be crucial to the case, is still somewhat relevant. The victim obviously would like it back. You know, you may have to go to the defense attorney and sort of get permission. But it'd probably be better to hear from an evidence custodian who works these cases rather than rely on my increasingly fading memory of those days. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other senator that has any questions? Do we have any public testimony? Anyone in the audience that would like, if you'd stick around, please, Senator Dyson. Would you come up forward, please, and state your affiliation? State your name for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Annie Carpinetti, and I represent the criminal division of the Department of Law.
Okay.
And I just wanted to, I have discussed this with Senator Dyson, and we understand how victims want to get their property back, mm-hmm. especially if it's mm-hmm. you know, valuable property that they need to use, and most of us can identify with that. Our one concern is this: the state has a duty to preserve evidence that is discoverable by the defense. And if we don't do that, and if the police don't do that, the state, in its prosecution cases, is sanctioned, and the sanctions run the gamut from dismissing the prosecution to there's a possibility of them being, the jury being instructed that they have to presume that this particular evidence would not be favorable to the state. So we are working under some constraints as to what the constitutional right to discovery of evidence by the defense. So we wanted to make it clear that the police, when they are determining whether or not the property should be returned, need to consult the defense and the prosecution before doing so. The way it's drafted, it makes it look to me a little bit like the police on their own can make that decision, and I think most police agencies, of course, would consult the prosecuting authority and the defense, but we would like to make it clear that they would before they made that decision, because this is before 60, you know, it doesn't say when, it just says before 60 days after the case is completed. So it is important that we keep evidence so that we can meet our discovery obligations under the law.
Okay, is there any other questions? Senator French.
Thank you. Can you flesh out what the meaning of the word final, or the phrase final disposition of the case is? Is that the exhaustion of all appellate opportunities?
Through the chair, yes, that's what it means to me. After, and these days, that date is not necessarily that clear, because you have post-conviction relief and you have appeals, and the more important the case, the longer it goes. So that's how I read final disposition, is after all the appeals are resolved.
Okay, is that satisfactory?
Follow-up question. That informs the first half. And as to the language that Senator Dyson is proposing, do you have a clause or a phrase that you think should be added to make it clear that the law enforcement agency, you know, must speak to the prosecution and to the defense before releasing the property?
Well, I just drafted this on the fly, so I'm sure your drafters can improve quite a bit, but I thought after on line 9, after the word determines, put a comma and say, after consulting the prosecuting authority on the defense, comma, and then go on. That would be my suggestion, but I'm sure Mr. Lookup can make that sound better.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator French.
I'll move that as a conceptual amendment with the proviso that it go through Ledge Legal and come back to us as a drafted amendment.
Okay, is there any objection to that? Okay, and then, okay, Senator Dyson?
Yeah, kind of thinking about the process, the next committee referral is judiciary.
Mm-hmm.
If you all chose, you could certainly reason that this committee's kind of decision is that this is in the public interest to do this and to protect victims from continual victimization, and that we could have a gentle person's agreement here that we'll fix it in judiciary, which this particular part of it is certainly a legal issue. Your okay. Choice.
Okay, that's it. And Senator French, do you?
Well, I think maybe we're one step. I've moved the amendment. I think the amendment's passed. I think the bill could leave committee. It depends mm-hmm. on the will of the committee, but the language would appear as a, you know. So I guess, yeah, it'll appear in the next committee, you yeah. know, when the document gets there.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay,
I would just concur with Senator French in the inclusion of the prosecuting authority, because they're the ones that are going to determine the weight of the evidence issue as compared to just whether it might be relevant or not. So I think that conceptual amendment is appropriate.
Okay, Senator Dyson, did you?
And it's my understanding of existing law is that the prosecutor has to get, well, maybe this, even with the amendment, gets to where we want, which is I want to bump this up as a priority for the prosecutors and the law enforcement folks to take care of the victim here. Already, as I'm told, they have to get permission or agreement of the defense for the evidence to be released, you know, under existing law. And so maybe the changes that we're making with this language as amended
determined
helps to do that.
Okay. Okay.
I'm good.
Thank you. And no one has signed up to give additional testimony. And is there anyone off net? And there's no one on Senate Bill 158 off net. So with that, I'm going to close public testimony. Does anyone on the committee have any questions or comments? Okay. What is the will of the committee on this bill? Do I hear a motion to move the bill from committee? Okay, Senator Meyer.
Madam Chair, I move that we move Senate Bill number 158 as amended from committee with individual recommendations.
Do I hear any objections? Are there any objections? No, I'm sorry I cut you off a little bit.
Sorry.
Okay. Thank you all.
With that, we'll hearing none, Senate Bill 158 passes out of state affairs to the next committee of referral with the judiciary, no, okay, which I guess is judiciary. Okay. So a brief at ease while we sign. Thank you. Senate bill, and we did pass that as amended. I wanted to state for the record that one, Senate Bill 158. Senate Bill 68, now we're dealing with an act relating to voting rights of felons. Senator Davis is in the room. Would you come please forward and present your bill? State your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Chairwoman. It's nice to have a female chair in something that I'm going to speak to. So this is my first time to come before you. I do have a bill today, Senate Bill 68, and I have Linda Zog, one of my aides, is going to give the presentation on the bill. It might be new to three of you because you're new here on the Senate, but this bill has been heard before. And I'm sure that Senator French will remember this because it's a bill that went before his committee in the last session. I'll let her give the overview and then we will answer questions. And I know we have people online to testify, but I don't know if they're still there.
Yes, we do have someone from the Kenai LIO and someone else here from, yeah, we have three people that will give testimony.
Okay. I'm Linda Zog, and I'm an aide to Senator Davis. What I'd like to do is review the sponsor statement, and then, as the senator said, we'll be available for questions. Senate Bill 68, an act related to the voting rights of felons. Across the country, states handling the right to vote for returning felons differ. Two states, Maine and Vermont, do not take away a felon's right to vote. 13 states allow felons to vote upon release from incarceration. 21, including Alaska, allow felons to vote after they've completed all of their probation parole requirements, while 14 states permanently disenfranchise certain felons. If our belief is that felons, once released, have paid their debt to society, then returning their right to vote upon release from incarceration would be a positive step. Senate Bill 68 allows felons upon release from incarceration to register to vote. This bill starts the process which allows felons to start assuming responsibility for their reintegration into communities. We are each responsible for how our government works, and we do that through voting. In Alaska, 6,081 Alaskans have lost their right to vote because of felony convictions. Currently, Alaska law bars the vote to persons convicted of felons of moral turpitude until the expiration of post-incarceration period of probation or parole, which is often years after they have re-entered society to become productive members or productive citizens and taxpayers. Harsh sentencing laws over the past 30 years have allowed the prison population to balloon while reducing the rehabilitation model to almost non-existent. Over 4.7 million Alaska Americans, or one in 43 adults, cannot vote due to felony convictions, while one-third or more of them were incarcerated due to alcohol and drug offenses. In Alaska, we have gone from slightly over 800 prisoners in 1984 to 5,344 in 2008, an increase of almost 149%. Of those incarcerated in Alaska, 48 are Caucasians, 36% are Alaska Native, 10% are African American, 3% are Hispanic, and 3% are Asian Pacific Islanders. Nationally, minority felons are disproportionately disenfranchised under current laws, and the harm of this continued disenfranchisement after release is exacerbated by stigma and other forms of discrimination as they try to re-enter society. In Alaska, 52% of our incarcerated offenders are minorities. In Alaska, we do not have a problem taking a person off the voting rolls if convicted of a felony, but we do not have a system that will automatically allow them to return to the voting rolls upon termination of supervision. Voting is just one of the many steps a returning felon must make to become a productive member of the community. This bill will help provide a clear time for returning voting rights and providing an important right and responsibility to felons returning to their communities.
I see it has a zero fiscal note. Okay, thank you. Is there any members that have any questions of the sponsor of the bill? Okay, Senator Meyer.
Madam Chair, yeah, just a couple. How many, and I think you said this, Linda, how many people are we talking about here?
When I called the Division of Elections, they have 600, and I think it's 6,081 persons that are not allowed to vote because of felony conviction.
Okay, and then the bill says that the department will give the person written notification that the person's restored right to vote.
And actually, with the computers in place these days, it would be relatively easy as you were discharging someone from the institution to have an automatic notice go to the Division of Elections that they've been released.
Okay.
And that would save everyone a little, not a lot of time, but a little bit of time, and would kind of ensure that that's not one of those things that gets overlooked in the normal course of business.
Okay. Well, yeah, 6,000 is quite a few, so that's why I kind of question a no impact or a zero fiscal note, but it's probably a small enough amount that they didn't weren't too concerned about it.
Senator Meyer, through the chair, I think that you can say it's probably a no impact fiscally because, in theory, that's already occurring. It's just staggered out over a longer period of time. When folks get, you know, in our state, folks have traditionally been on probation for 5 years, and a few years back we increased that so that there's a possibility of 10 years. A vast majority are in the 5-year range, but it's a fairly good stagger, and I, having been a probation officer, I do know that as people get near the end of their sentence and they're doing okay, you really are focusing not on them walking out the door as being done with their supervision. You are focusing on the next problem that's actually walking in the door. So that is one of those things that can and frequently does slip through the cracks.
Okay, may I follow up?
Yes, follow up, please.
So are we saying then that when a convicted felon leaves the prison that he or she then is basically paid their price and now they can come back in community and be a voting member? Is that what this bill says?
Senator Myers, I think what it says is they've paid their institutional price and now they have a period of probation, and one of the goals of probation is to try and help them reintegrate into society without creating a risk to other people. And if you want people to be tied to society to start making positive changes, then you need to start giving them back the responsibility. And one of those responsibilities, I think, is voting and participating in your community.
And I certainly don't disagree with that, but I think, and we should probably take this a step further then too, and probably look at starting to give back their PFDs. Because I think a lot of times, you know, they need that extra money to help them get their feet back on the ground. But that's a separate bill, I understand.
Senator Myers, I'd be more than glad to address that issue because I don't disagree with that. Okay. But you may not want to go there right now.
Gotcha.
Thank you. And I would just say, too, I see that this is a dignity bill because if we do, in fact, want to have them integrate back into society, there's an awful lot of dignity attached with the ability to vote, even though going in that maybe wasn't a priority. But I think it extends the olive branch that we do want you to succeed, and we don't want to see you again. And so to me, it's like a piece of dignity that we're offering up. Senator Pasvan, I'm sorry, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. What I was wondering is approximately the number of people that are now seeking the right to vote after they have fully completed, and, you know, I understand that of the 6,081, how many would be eligible now to register to vote, and then how many yearly would one expect?
Well, if Senator Pasvan, through the chair, if I may, you have slightly over 5,000 people that are on supervised probation or parole, and you have in your institutional setting, you figure that you have 1/3 that would be felons and 2/3 that would be misdemeanors, just as a general breakout. And of those, if you're talking sentenced felons, you're probably talking, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 or so, you know, and maybe as many as 1,500 that are sentenced felons.
So how many, again, what I'm trying to find out is how many, assuming this were to pass, we would then bring them in, but then how many would one expect every year?
Senator Pasquin. I don't know the answer to that, in part because what we know is that those are folks, that 6,081 were folks that were actually on the voting rolls and were taken off at the time of their conviction for a felony. So as I talked with Senator Davis earlier, I don't know if folks that were not registered to vote, and once they got convicted, then they wouldn't be taken off the rolls because they weren't on the rolls to begin with. So I think that we're targeting a group of folks here that actually were registered to vote and then ended up with a conviction and then were taken off. I'm not absolutely positive on that, but that's my read at the moment.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
May I also speak to that? I think you were talking about the number, how many would actually apply and want to be able to vote. And if this bill would pass, then that would be a function of parole officer, correction officer, or whoever's in charge of that person to let them know that they are eligible to register to vote. Mm-hmm. You would tell them that. And then it would be left up to them to decide if they want to do it. So we wouldn't be able to give you the numbers on how many is actually going to do it. We can tell you how many has been on the roll, and maybe they would want to come back and re-enter into that and register to vote. But it would keep going because the staff would, in terms, as they left the facility and was on parole, they would let them know that they would be eligible to register to vote, re-register.
Thank you. Follow-up?
In part, you know, I'm wondering whether probation officers at the end of probation are telling people that they have the right, because they're at the end of probation, that they can register to vote. And then if that happens, what percentage of the people that have completed their incarceration and have completed their probation actually register to vote to become productive members?
They might be able to provide you that information from Department of Correction. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
And I don't know if anybody's online or somebody's here.
I have a few people online.
I mean, from the department.
I don't have anyone from the department. I do have someone on from ACLU. Okay, sir, would you? Department of Corrections, would you like to come forward, please? State your name and affiliation, and if you can answer some of these questions from the Department of Corrections, we appreciate it. Senator Davis, you can remain seated.
For the record, Duane Peoples, Department of Corrections. Based on analysis that was pulled in prior years for the last version of the bill, in 07, there was approximately 2,700 people in communications to Senator French that would fall under this.
Okay. Does that answer adequately? Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions? Okay. Is there anyone here in the audience that would like to provide public testimony? If not, I will. Oh, you do. Okay. Come forward, please, and state your name. Are you Margaret Pugh?
I am.
Okay. And you're from Juneau? Okay, and state your name and affiliation just for the record. Thank you.
Certainly. Thank you. My name is Margaret Pugh. I'm happy to be here today and address this bill once again. I think that was last year that I spoke to this bill, and I appreciate, Madam Chair, the opportunity to come forward again. This is a national issue, mm-hmm. and I'm very happy that Alaska is one of the states that is, in fact, hearing this issue. The sponsor statement has provided the statistics and even starts out by talking about the disparity in the ways that the states handle the restoration of voting rights for felons. And I think I said last year there's no American way to do this. There's not. It's all over the map how states address it. Some states never take the right to vote away from a felon. Some states never return it once they do take it. It's just a complete mishmash. So you have a possibility of a person being convicted of a felony in one state and never losing the right to vote. And in another state, same offense, and never be able to vote again. So it's there's this terrible mishmash, and I think in the in a democracy, that may not be the most favorable way to approach things. That's one thing. The other thing is that I would like to address is that I think that the denial of voting rights for felons is a vestige of an earlier period in our development in the United States of America. I think that there was a time when we denied voting rights to people who were illiterate. We don't do that anymore. We denied voting rights to people who did not own property. We don't do that anymore. We denied voting rights to people who could not afford to pay a poll tax. We don't do that anymore. So I think time has come for us to say, we don't do this anymore. We don't deny voting rights to people who have completed their time incarcerated. Very simple thing in the day of computers to send the list to the Division of Elections. It's simple, and I think it would put Alaska in the fore of doing the right thing. And
so, Margaret, you're speaking in favor of Senate Bill 68 strongly.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Thank you. Did I fail to say that? I do appreciate you pointing that out. And I also didn't say that I'm retired after 32 years with the state of Alaska, primarily in the field of corrections. And so that's sort of where I'm coming from.
Definitely lean some weight, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any questions from any members? Okay. I'm going to go off net now to Jeffrey Mittman from Anchorage ACLU of Alaska. Are you there, Jeffrey?
I am. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Jeffrey Mittman. I'm the Executive Director of the ACLU of Alaska, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 68. The ACLU supports civil liberties and constitutional rights under the Alaska and federal constitutions. As has been testified, a majority of Alaska's approximately 11,000-plus persons who are disfranchised are actually not in prison or in jail, but are living in the communities. There are a growing number of states who believe that disfranchisement should not be as limited as possible, and we hope that Alaska will join their ranks. Restricting voting rights does not prevent crime, does not provide compensation to victims. Instead, disfranchising people following their release from incarceration accomplishes actually the opposite of what we should be doing to promote reentry. A recent study has found a link between voting participation and reoffense, that is, people who voted after release from supervision were half as likely to be arrested as those who did not vote. As has also been testified to, the ACLU, of course, is concerned about the disparate racial impact of disfranchisement. For example, of approximately the 1,500 or so 11,000 Alaskans who are disfranchised as a result of felony convictions are African Americans, which represents 7.6% of the overall black voting age of the population of the state, as opposed to about just 2.4% for other voters. As with Alaska Natives, about 31% of the total disfranchised population, although Alaska Natives are only about 15%. It is for these and other reasons that there are a number of prominent organizations who support re-enfranchisement upon release from incarceration. For example, the American Probation and Parole Association resolved that restoration of voting rights upon completion of an offender's prison sentence should occur and advocates no loss of voting rights while on community supervision. Similarly, the National Black Police Association states that automatic restoration of voting rights should occur upon discharge from prison and advocates no loss of voting rights while on community supervision. Likewise, the American Bar Association does not support collateral sanctions such as the deprivation of voting rights except during actual confinement. We appreciate Senator Davis sponsoring this bill, and would certainly hope that the committee will act favorably upon it. We do hope that there will be a minor change to the bill, and that it will not require persons who become re-eligible to vote to provide proof that they've completed their sentence. This practice is generally considered an unnecessary obstacle, and simply an administrative paperwork issue, and we think that the bill can be accomplished without that. In summary, individuals who vote are more likely to give to charity, to volunteer, to attend a school board meeting, serve on juries, be interested in politics, participate in public demonstration, and cooperate with fellow citizens on community affairs, all things that we want former offenders to do. And for these and many reasons, we support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Are there any questions of Jeffrey from committee members? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move on to Peter McKay from Kenai. Peter, are you... available?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Chairman, and the committee for the opportunity to be heard on this. My name is Peter McKay. I'm a citizen. I'm speaking as a parent of a son who was a felon who is now on parole, and so that's where I'm coming from. I'd like to thank Senator Davis for sponsoring this bill. I think it's truly a bill that's not being driven by any lobby group or special interest group, and Senator Davis should be recognized for bringing this bill on behalf of convicts, which is really a group without a voice. This is not a large voting block, and I don't think this is going to have a large impact on state elections, but I think it's a nice gesture to the former convicts. As the chair mentioned about extending an olive branch, I think this is important. I absolutely support rehabilitation for ex-convicts. I think some our correctional system could use a little more of that. I think if even one ex-felon uses this small gesture from the state and actually doesn't reoffend, or it eases their transition back into society, then we've done the right thing, or that the you people have done the right thing. It seems like that's the way we want to be moving. So I do support this bill. It does restore one of our most important rights to these citizens, and they're citizens of Alaska, just like you and me. So I urge the committee to approve this bill. I would encourage some of you members of the committee to consider co-sponsoring it as well, and I urge you to refer it along. Thank you very much for hearing me.
Thank you for your testimony. If there's no one else to testify, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. Do any committee members have any further comments or questions? Seeing none, then what is the will of the committee? Do you want to move this bill from State Affairs out to Judiciary to the next committee of referral? Senator Meyer, would you make the motion?
Madam Chair, yes, I move that we move Senate Bill number 68 from State Affairs Committee to Judiciary Committee with attached zero fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Okay. With any objections? Are there any objections? Hearing none. Senate Bill 68 moves out to Judiciary with the fiscal note, and we'll sign. And State Affairs is now over. Pleasure.